Thank you, ma'am, for that. Thank you. Hi, everybody. My name's Darren. I'm an alcoholic. Hello, hello. I want to thank the committee for inviting me here, especially Kevin. Thank you so much. Got a lot of love for you, brother. And, wow, what a weekend. Went to a lot of the panels, a lot of the meetings, pretty good stuff. I want you to know right out the gate, I'm the worst drunk I've ever met. I can't believe I'm sober. I can't believe I'm sober and I'm happy. Those two things don't go together, right? That's why I don't want to get sober. That's why typically we don't want to get sober, because sobriety sucks. Being sober in the beginning sucks. Being sober without a program definitely sucks, right? In fact, when I just, the elimination of our drinking is but a beginning. When I put the drink and or the drugs down, I am restless, irritable, discontent. I'm quick to anger, self-pity, screw you, screw me. In fact, I'm so uncomfortable, I go and take another drink. Now, of course, that sounds obvious to us, but if you've just come out of the lockdown psychiatric unit one more time, the most insane thing you could do would be to take another drink. Yet there I am, all lit up again, because I have no other solution. And that was to go on and over and over and over. And my last couple of years of drinking was jails, institutions and death. And I did not want to come to Alcoholics Anonymous, just like most of you. I did not want to do that. Have you seen this thing on the telly? That's the TV for you lot. Have you seen it on the telly? They always depict Alcoholics Anonymous the most depressing, boring way you could possibly imagine, right? It's usually 14 bald, fat, ugly men in a circle in a smoky-filled, miserable room. One of them might be a week sober, and they're all clapping and crying. Like, oh my God, I never want to end up there. You know what I mean? And then towards the end of me drinking, that's the only place anyone's telling me where to go. The doctors, the psychiatrists, my family and friends that hadn't talked to me in over a year, telling me, Darren, you need to go to that 12-step program. I'm like, no. Listen, mate, listen. I'm already suicidally depressed. And now you want me to go to that A&A bullshit? What's that all about? What are you trying to do, finish me off quicker? I don't understand it. I remember the moment, alcohol didn't do this to me. I was born in Manchester, England, by the way. I'm not having a stroke. But I remember the last time, I was absolutely, towards the end of my drinking, I was cornered by King Alcohol. I had met my match. And when you come to Alcoholics Anonymous, when it's the last house on the block, it seems to work a little bit better. That's just my opinion. And I was living in a shitty house in a crappy room on the west side of the mean streets of Santa Barbara. Quicksand stretched out all around me. It was midnight and I was maudlin drunk as usual. My three other roommates were downtown partying, having excluded me, of course, yet again, which made for more self-pity. And it was over. I just was cornered in every single respect. And because I'm going to kill myself, I finally made that call to Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's midnight, and I'm miserable. And I had to find the yellow pages, right? You young'uns will have to Google that shit, won't you? I found the yellow pages, and it took me forever to find the Alcoholics Anonymous. That's how drunk I was. Darren, it's AA. It's in the beginning of the book. Like. And I called the number, and this lovely older lady answered the phone, and she was so good at her job. I'll be forever thankful to her. And I got straight down to business. Yes, lady, I might drink too much, but so would you if what's happened to me had happened to you. And I'm going to kill myself anyway. And she would always just talk me down off the ledge. She'd insert a little nugget here and there. And I'm just going on, and she's talking me down. And finally she says to me, well, Darren, have you never been to a meeting? No. She said, well, oh my gosh, there's a meeting down the road from you tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. It's a men's meeting. And she made it sound so special. So special. I didn't know there were 200 meetings a week in Santa Barbara. I passed out. I came to the next day, shaking and baking. And I remembered, oh my God, I've got to go to this goddamn AA meeting. And I can't, now it's in the afternoon, I can't say I didn't take a little drink. Oh, I had to have a little cheeky drink. You know, because I'm physically dependent on vodka, right? Plus, if I'm going to leave my bedroom, let alone my house, I need to have something in me, you know what I mean? Especially if I'm going to do something really weird. Like interact with other humans. And so I had enough vodka in me. I showered for the first time in months. I gelled my hair all sexy. Like I used to be able to, you know what I mean? And I went wandering down to this AA meeting. And it was nothing like I'd seen on the telly. It was like this place. There was a vibe about it. There was a vast amount of fun about it. It was a huge lit hall. It was a massive men's stag. 80 or 90 men down there. Now, they all seemed really happy to see each other. They seemed to know each other. Someone had gotten engaged and everybody stoked for them. Someone else had gotten a promotion. Now, I'm obviously not interacting with these people. I'm sat down away from these happy folks. You know what I mean? Well, by the time I get to AA, I don't like people generally speaking. But I especially hate those happy people. So I'm an observer. I'm just sat down observing what's going on. And then what happened next really captured my attention. Just underneath, the deadly earnestness started to kick in. The secretary shuffled his papers, went and sat down all business-like. Everybody sat down in these two huge circles. Everybody shut up. Everybody got off the phones. Can you believe it? They sat down and they respected the start of the meeting. And as they were doing some readings, and I'm just bewildered, I'm looking around going, wow, this is crazy. And as the meeting started, I thought, this is a good time to open my jacket pocket. I pull out a huge bottle of vodka and start drinking in the meeting. The guy next to me says, holy fuck, this... It was a potty mouth meeting like this one. I'm so happy she did that. I'm so happy. He said, oh my God, this guy's drinking vodka in the meeting. And I was looking around like, fuck, why is nobody else drinking? Isn't this Alcoholics Anonymous? Don't you have a drinking problem? I have a really bad drinking problem. I stayed drunk in the rooms of Santa Barbara AA for a year. For a year! I got quite the reputation back then, let me tell you. They'd all say like, oh my God, is that Englishman watching? He'll pull out a bottle of vodka in a minute. And I did. It took me 3 months to figure out what you cheeky monkeys were doing. You lot were putting your vodka in a water bottle and bringing it to the meeting. You could have told me. Now, I wasn't always like that. I started drinking at 13. I drank from 13 to 33. Now, 13, I thought, you know, that's a really young age. I thought someone's going to fall off the chair here. Like, 13, oh, that's outrageous. No, it's not, is it? Especially not in Alcoholics Anonymous. What I've realised is, over the years, is you can't outdo anybody in Alcoholics Anonymous. Somebody over here is saying to themselves, I was drinking when I was 8. Oh, fucking K. Okay. This one woman speaker, she gives a great talk. However, her whole pitch surrounds the fact that she was drunk in her addicted mother's womb. In the womb. Okay, Teresa, you win. You win. You can't outdo that one, can you? I think she was born blowing a .25, smoking a pack of Marlboro Reds, like. Get her out of there. Now, I drank from 13 to 33. I went to college. I went to school and college and university. I had a good time. Did anybody else have a bit of a good time? I had a bit of a good time. Some people don't like that, it seems like. I don't know why. It's like, don't worry, mate, I am going to ruin my life and then want to kill myself. We're going to get there. But I had a bit of a good time. And I became an entrepreneur out of university. My brother had a great idea. He was already a businessman. He's 6 years older than me. And he's all, Darren, come back to Manchester and we'll get together. And we made a great team. We made a great team because he's a brilliant businessman and I'm a good bullshitter. Like you lot, you know. We'll call him the marketing director. And so we were in the insurance company business, and if you had a non-fault road traffic accident, my company would go and give you a replacement vehicle, put you with an attorney, get any out-of-pocket expenses back to you, and we made money at every different turn. It was amazing. It was a great idea. Every time a check came in, we'd buy another vehicle. You know, the banker watched with amused skepticism. I whirled some fat chicks in and out of his account. But when I became into my mid to later 20s, that's when alcoholism starts to take its grip on me. Now, alcoholism doesn't come in the form of me waking up. Like, I didn't come here for the longest time because I thought I don't look like an alcoholic either. I have a preconceived notion of what it looks like to be an alcoholic. It's the bum on the end of the off ramp, right? The big bushy beard, a dirty tan, begging for change. So it can't be anybody in here because you're either too young, too beautiful, too well put together, too businesslike. Well, some of you look like you've had a good drink over there, I suppose. But, you know, so it makes no sense. So as I'm approaching my mid to later 20s and alcoholism's taking its grip, it doesn't come in the form of me all of a sudden looking like an alcoholic and drinking vodka. Alcoholism is subtle and progressive. And alcoholism comes in the form of massive amounts of anxiety. You remember that, don't you? Yeah. And alcoholism comes in the form of massive amounts of depression. And it comes in the form of this spiritual illness that's eating me alive from the inside out. My soul's becoming ever blacker and soon it will be ash. And what alcoholism wants to do with us, it wants to get you away from the herd, get you on your own and kill you. That's the goal of alcoholism. Now, so during the day when I'm not drinking is when alcoholism was kicking my ass the most. When I'm going out at night time, drinking is still working for me at this stage of alcoholism. That's the only time I feel good. You take me out for a night and I have a couple of pints and maybe a line or something, I'm like a mixture between James Bond, Dave Chappelle and Harry fucking Potter. You know what I mean? We're going to have a good time. But during the day I am dying of untreated alcoholism and I don't know what's going on. And the best description I can give alcoholism is that it's like something weird is happening to me. It's almost like, Darren, you've had such a good time, you little soul, you've had such a good time, let's see if you can handle this. And everything changed and the anxiety ramped through the roof. I remember I couldn't get out of my nice sports car to go into a meeting that I'd set up the day before because I'm paralysed with fear. I didn't know that was alcoholism. Now, because this is Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm going to talk about alcoholism, but I did try cocaine once for 20 years. I love that shit. I love amphetamine, I love speed, I love anything that will allow me to drink Bob under the table, you know what I mean? Everybody thought I was an animal. Have you seen how much Darren can drink? Yeah, they didn't know I was buzzing off my head off some amphetamine. You need an elephant gun to dart me down, you know what I mean? But it was such a nightmare. The other description I would give what happens when alcoholism creeps in is it steals your happy gene. Now, I couldn't remember for the longest time when I was last genuinely happy. And then I'd see other people happy and it would piss me off. How can you be genuinely happy and I'm not? And inwardly, the suicide thoughts are coming in. And it just doesn't make any sense. The other problem for us is, what do we have to do? We have to pretend everything's going all right. How are you doing? I'm like on my head all day. I can't do my job. I'm losing my shit. My anxiety's through the roof. Darren, how are you doing? Hey, I'm all right. How are you doing? Right? Because if I can, in my sick mind, if I can convince you that I'm okay, maybe I'll be okay. right? And only another alcoholic will understand that. Things got so bad, I got away with so much bullshit because I was the boss. But we always have somebody that's on to us. Oh, my brother, he was on to me big time. And finally, we went to we used to have these monthly boardroom meetings. There were four directors, we're a small shareholding company. I hated these things. I'm so uncomfortable. And he started the meeting off and said, yeah, Darren, so we've actually had a meeting before this meeting and we've decided we're going to have to let you go. I said, wait, what? Can you do that? Only an alcoholic can pull that off. I got fired from a business that I created. And I knew how brilliant of a businessman he was, and I knew he'd have it all tied up in a nice little bow. And so my fear quickly turned to anger. And I said, wait a minute, what are you talking about? And I went for him. I kicked the table out of the way and I went to give him a flying headbutt, right? Hey, I believe in clear communication. You know what I mean? The finance director tackles me. It's just one of those awful, classic alcoholic moments that we've all had. The mask has slipped. Darren's been found out. It was the worst, most depressing day of my life up to that moment. I had to leave the sports car there. They're going to cut me a crappy check. It was the worst time financially to exit the business, of course. And as I'm wandering home, the only thing I care about, like any good alcoholic, is, wait a minute, I got to change the narrative on this shit, right? I don't want anyone talking poorly about me, and I'm already scheming. Who was in the room? Who witnessed this? My brother was there, but he's a wanker, don't worry about him. The two other directors that were there, that's not too bad. All my mates don't know. All I cared about is what my crew thinks about me. What do my mates think about me? And as I'm walking home, depressed, and I'm, oh my God, everything's been found out, what's going on? Now, it was a Thursday night, and I was already going out with my mates that night. Anybody else's weekend longer than their week? Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, that was my weekend. So I went to the bar early. Here's what alcohol does for us. I went to the bar early and had a couple of stiff drinks, and woof, the old fierce determination to win comes right back. And here comes my mate Simon, and here comes Dave. I said, did you hear about that bullshit today? My brother's a wanker, dude. I built that business up from my bedroom, and he bought it. By this time I've had another drink, 15 of my other friends are all in, and I've got an audience, and they're all buying into me bullshit. I said, yeah, I can do anything I put my mind to, I don't need any of those people. They're all, that's right, Darren, don't worry about it, you can do whatever you want. And I said, hey, you know what, boys, when I was a student, I used to love travelling. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go travelling again. Oh, you know what, I'm going to go to America. And I'm going to become president of America or some shit. Hey, apparently any fucker can become president of the world. So I wasn't short of confidence. Now, I think the problem is the shitty UK weather. Right? That's the problem. I think the problem is me brother, you know, he's a right wanker. I think the problem is me girlfriend. She keeps leaving me for stupid little things like my cheating on her and stuff like that. But no, somebody puts the problem on a flight at Manchester International Airport and flies it all the way to LAX. And there I am. And an uncle I've never met before comes and picks me up, gets me in his car. First thing he does, he builds a big spliff, takes a big drag of it, hands it to me. He says, Darren, welcome to America. I'm all, thank you very much, Uncle Patrick. Now, this man owns an English bar in downtown Santa Barbara. See, there is a God. We drive up to Santa Barbara. I came to Santa Barbara for a two-week holiday 24 years ago. I never made it back to England. Can you believe it? I came here just to take the edge off. Now, he owns the bar, and so everybody loves this man. He's a great dude. Within 2 weeks, I've become a bit of a local. I realise England has a dark cloud over it still. And now when I'm on holiday, I like to have a drink. My lack of responsibility is really going to mask my alcoholism. Because if you think about it, staying drunk or high is not a problem for us. It's not a problem at all. It's a problem for other people. It's a problem for the authorities. It's a problem for bosses. It's a problem for spouses. But it ain't a problem for me. So instead of staying for 2 weeks, I stay for 90 days that my visa waiver would allow. And I'm drunk off my ass every day that I'm there for 90 days. I become this daily drinker. A friend, then I'm in a blur. My friend then comes over from England, and I buy an SUV, and we travel the whole of America for 5 months, spending all my money that they had to give me out in England. 5 months, 12,000 miles. We saw everything a tourist would want to see. 32 states. We even went up into Canada, back down through the Rockies, all the way through Flagstaff, back to Santa Barbara. By the time I was drunk off my ass in every little town, city, and state. By the time we got back to Santa Barbara, I had 7 outstanding warrants in 5 different states. That means we had a good time. We had a good time. Now, my friend who's normal, he flies back to England, but it still has a dark cloud for me. And now I'm an illegal alien as well, whatever that means. I become a drunk bartender. I become a drunk bartender in my uncle's pub. Oh my God, it was the worst job in the world and the best job in the world, all rolled into one. But my anxiety was through the roof. Through the roof. I should have been fired after my first shift. I'm the drunkest person in the bar and I'm the bartender. I come to the next morning, they have a shadowy recollection of me being slumped onto a stool in the corner of the pub and watching the locals serving each other, giving each other money. And I'm like, I'm looking at it going, this ain't right, man. This ain't right. And I'd be sat on the end of my bed going, what is wrong with me? I knew I wasn't normal anymore. Do you remember that moment when you know you're not normal? I've drank so much hard alcohol, I've done so many drugs, I've ruined me wiring. And only you will understand that. I've cracked me mind. I'm operating on a level that's not healthy. It's almost psychotic, and I need dumbing down all the time. And alcohol will do that. That's the only way I can go to work. I used to sit on the end of my bed going, oh my God, what is wrong with me? I used to be somebody. Other people were responsible. I was responsible for them, you know. Now I just can't do anything normal. I have a job where I'm allowed to have a cheeky drink, and I'm even screwing that up. You know, I would come to in the morning, shaking and sweating, Jägermeister coming out of every pore. Remember that? I would have to, and I'd please don't be a work day, because I'm the anxiety's through the roof. I'm going to have a nervous mental breakdown. Look, I'm like, oh my God, it's Wednesday. Holy shit, and I've got to be at work in half an hour. God damn. So I jump in the shower, jump on my bike, because I don't want another DUI. Huge delivery, I'm bombing it down State Street, huge delivery trucks are coming up the other way. Oh, I fantasize about just going under one of them, and it would look like an accident, and only you know what I mean by that. But I'd make it to Dargan's Irish Pub, 9:20 in the morning, desperate for a drink, I've got to be at work at 9:30. So I'd put my bike outside Dargan's, and I want it to look normal, like what other loser needs a drink, but I need a drink desperately before I go into work at the English bar across the road. And I'd open the pub door, and it'd be this huge empty Irish pub just like normal. Beautiful Yvonne, she was gorgeous, way out of my league. She's cleaning the beer pumps or some weird shit. I never cleared anything in my pub. And I'd walk in there going, oh my God, I'm dying, how can I finagle a drink? And she'd look my way and I'd go, hey. She'd go, Darren, how you doing, young fella? I'd be like, hey, Yvonne, I think I'm sick, actually. And I wanted to get my shift covered, but I've had the previous 14 Wednesdays shifts covered. You know, because we'd go to work with a hangover so bad that most normal people would dial 911. Right? And as I'm trying to think about a drink, she says to me, magically, would you like a pint? I'm like, fuck yes, I'd like a pint. Now it's like it's her idea. I'm like, oh, go on then, you know. Now, but here's the problem. I don't think I can wait the 30 seconds it's going to take her to pour this thing. I'm stood at the bar. She wanders around, goes there, and I'm like, oh my God. You remember, you're having a nervous mental breakdown. 30 seconds is a long time. She's pouring the drink. She looks my way. Hey. Now she comes back to me with the drink and she puts it right in front of me. But she doesn't walk off to clean. She stands there looking right at me. You know, like she wants to chit chat or some shit. And I just want to pull my knife out and stab her in the neck. Get that awkward bit over with. And I grab my drink and I pour it. Oh, I drink my drink. 3 seconds flat. Woof, but it doesn't do. It's not enough. It's not quite enough. It's not strong enough. And I'm dying. And she can see I'm dying. And I'm about to trudge off to work. And she says, would you like a Jaeger? Oh my God, she's offering me liquid heroin. She doesn't bother with little shot glass bullshit. She gives me a tumbler full of that sucker. I feel good, better, just watching her pour that thing right to the top. She gives it to me and I glug it down, glug, 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 glug. What's the problem? What is the goddamn problem? I've gone from a trembling, despairing, nervous wreck to a man brimming over with self-reliance like that in 30 seconds. Now I'm all cocky and confident. Now I'm going to go to my bar. I might even come back and shag Yvonne on my break. You know what I mean? If she's lucky. I go to my bar, I drink too much yet again, I overshoot the mark, I wake up the next morning with 6 missed calls. I answer the 7th call. Get down here now. Ooh. 18 months I had a sense of impending doom. 18 months of it. Now I know why we have a sense of impending doom. It's because something bad's going to happen. I go down to the bar and crying and please, Raf, please don't let me go. Oh my God, I don't know what's wrong. You'll never work in here ever again. Ever again. You need to go. You need to go back to England. You need to go to rehab. You need to do something. I should have fired you after your first shift. Get out of here. Oh, I tied one on that night. The drunk of all drunks. I got up the next morning and went down to that bar to see who took my shift. And I threw a pint over him in front of everybody. How to ostracize yourself from the whole of downtown Santa Barbara in a nanosecond. Only we can pull some shit like that off. Darren, you get out of here right now. I never want to see you ever again. And then I just go on a death march. I go on a death march for months. I'm not a cute little drunk dude. I'm not a functioning alcoholic. I am a vodka drinking maniac. And nobody's seen me for months. And a typical day for me is I would come to and it would be pitch black outside. And I have no idea whether it's night or day. And I would eventually figure it out. Oh my God, it's 5 a.m. that darkest hour before the dawn. Now I have strong, horrible, warm vodka under my bed at this stage of my drinking because I'm going to need some of it first daylight. I'm drinking from tall bottles of vodka and I always have 4 fingers left in the bottom of it because it's like a science project. That is exactly what I'll need in the morning, but I so desperately don't want to drink, but I can only last 10 or 15 minutes of the mental and hellish torture back and forth about just kill yourself, no, just do this. I'm just out of my mind, hearing the voices, hearing my name being called outside in the darkness. And after 10 minutes, I'd grab that bottle of vodka and it would just about relieve the crack mind. It would just about relieve the suicide thoughts. But as I've polished that bit of vodka off, here's the problem. I've just fed the beast and now the beast needs feeding. And I would put on my smelly, baggy clothing to go 1 block to Foodland liquor store right next to my house, not even 6 a.m. And I'd go into that place and I'd steal me. One time I'm going to Foodland and I come in front of a huge shop front window. My reflection's so bad, I come back to look at it again and go, oh my God. I go right up to the image. I got a big ass bushy beard. My hair is stuck to my head and face all over. I'm so sunken down. I'm yellow with jaundice. I look 15 years older than I should have. And I went right up to my reflection and I said, wow. I'd better not tell anyone about that and carried on to Foodland. And I steal me 2 big bottles of vodka and I go clinking off home. Now, when you get home, what you want to do is just pound the vodka and pass out, but no, can't do that. It's like a science project. It is immensely important that first bottle gets nursed into the later afternoon. Because the second bottle has to get me into the evening, saving enough. But I'm trying to get to, for once, trying to get to 10 o'clock, maybe even 11 o'clock at night. Because I could never sleep, to once catch a good enough sleep to wake up and not have to drink like that ever again. And it says, the mind and body are marvellous mechanisms. I drank like that for 2 more years. 2 more years of jails, institutions and death. You cannot scare us with death at our latter stages of drinking. It's like, bring it on. But alcoholism doesn't have the dignity to take us quickly. It can mess with you for years, if not decades. My fear is not dying an alcoholic death. My fear is living an alcoholic life. One miserable day at a time. Here's how I got sober. I came to one morning and there was no vodka under my bed. That had never happened to me before, and I took it as a sign, this is the day I'm going to kill myself. And I was fine with that. I'd tried to kill myself 3 months prior. 3 months prior, it was midnight, I was maudlin drunk, my 3 housemates were downtown partying again, having excluded me. And I remembered one of them was an arsenal of weapons. He was a maniac. So I broke into his bedroom, I jimmied the door, I found all these weapons. I found like a shotgun, an AK, loaded revolvers. Now I'm English, I don't quite know what I'm doing with a gun. But I stumble into the living room with the loaded revolver and I sit on the couch. I put the gun in my mouth. It's cold, it's heavy on my teeth. And I'm thinking, wait, do you blow the back of your head off? Or do you shoot up through the roof of your mouth? And as I'm thinking it through, the thought came to me, hey Darren, it's midnight. If you pull the trigger right now, you'll definitely wake the neighbours up. And I'm too polite for that shit, you know what I mean? So I just finished the job. But today I'm going to kill myself. I stay in my bedroom for a couple of hours. It's about 10 a.m. and I decide to throw myself off Santa Barbara's biggest bridge, Cold Springs Bridge. It's a popular suicide spot in my area. A bit like the Golden Gate. I go outside. Thank God my car is there. Remember that movie, Dude, Where's My Car? I could never find my car. I jump in my car. I drive 25 minutes up the mountain road. I park the car. I walk to the centre of the bridge. And I pause because I know it's going to kill my mum. And in that pause, grace came in the form of a man who told me the truth in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I came here drunk, like I told you. And I would sometimes share inappropriately, I'm going to kill myself, this shit doesn't work, blah, blah, blah. And he got so mad he took me off to the side. He said, Darren, what are you talking about? You haven't done nothing around here. And I got angry. I said, I've been coming here for a year, old man. He said, well, Darren, first of all, you should come sober, it works better. Okay. He said, in a drunk like you, you need to get a sponsor. You need to work the steps. And I knew he was right. I'm stood on that bridge and I knew I had 2 big secrets, just like many of you have 2 big secrets in here. One was I didn't have a sponsor, and if I did, it was in name only, which is the same bullshit. The other one is I wasn't working any steps. And so I pretty much made a decision on that bridge. I said to myself, okay, I'm going to go back to that AA bullshit and I'm going to work those stupid 12 steps. And when they don't work, I'm going to go and find that man. I'm going to have a little chit chat with him. I'll probably take him off the bridge with me, right? Now, I know enough about my stage of alcoholism that I can't just come skipping into the rooms. I need to be once again medically detoxed in the lockdown psychiatric unit. This would be my 4th time at Cottage Hospital Emergency Unit, the psychiatric ward. And I was getting used to that place. That was normal for me. So I drive all the way back down. I go to Santa Barbara Cottage Hospital Emergency Room and park in my usual spot. As I parked, I sideswiped the car next to me. Can you believe it? I've just driven down a fucking mountain road and I crash in the car park at the hospital. I get out of the car, security are there, 2 cops are around the corner, they come over. I'm like, sorry sir, that's my fault, I've got my ID, this is my car. One cop goes behind me, the other one comes right up to me, he's about to say something, he seems to change his mind and says, whoa, have you been drinking? I think that's a weird first question. I said, no, mate, have you? They don't like that approach. He said, you reek of alcohol. I said, I don't want to tell you. He said, well, you're doing some field sobriety tests. I said, okay. I do 25 minutes field sobriety tests. Perfectly. He's so pissed. He looked at his colleague. His colleague was like this. He said, you're doing more. I do 15 more minutes. Perfectly. Finally, he says, you're blowing into this little machine. I blow into a breathalyzer. I blow a 0.32. Oh. I haven't even had a drink yet. I'm waking up at a 0.32. Then I'm drinking my... I'm sober as a judge. These two, it's about 11 a.m. These two cops cannot believe it, man. They cannot believe it. And they're jibber-jabbering with each other. And I'm like, is this a good thing or a bad thing? Right. And then he starts to get the handcuffs and walks towards me. And I'm like, I panic then. Have you ever detoxed in jail? Oh my lord, you don't want to do that. And I started to panic and I said, listen dude, what you're doing? He said, turn around, you're going to jail. I said, if you take me to jail right now, I will kill somebody. I said, I'm small, mate, but I'm fucking dangerous, dude. Then I start to use the language of Alcoholics Anonymous and start to tell them the truth. And the moment I do that, the miracle almost starts to take place already. I pour my heart out, tell them about AA, I've no sponsor, tell them what I need to do, that it was gonna kill me mum, that's why I didn't do it. Now, of course they arrest me, but they decide not to take me to jail. They take me to the local police station. It felt so much safer to me. I'll ever be forever grateful for that. And now I'm handcuffed in the back of the squad car and we're going to the police station. They're so enamoured with what's going on, they actually radio ahead to their colleagues and they say, hey, we've got this Irishman and he blew a 0.3. I said, I'm English, you moron. They take me to the police station, they fingerprint me. I'm in there for at least 2 or 3 hours. I swear to God, everybody that worked in that police station came down to chit-chat with the Englishman. Everybody. They couldn't believe it. The tolerance level's just through the roof. Now, somebody that they know and trust comes and picks me up to take me back to the lockdown psychiatric unit. But so what? I'd literally gotten drunk twice on the way home from there. And I suppose it sounds a little bit, it is a bit like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and it sounds a little depressing, the lockdown psychiatric unit, but I love me some lockdown psychiatric unit. You know what I mean? You know why? Because a lot of narcotics are coming my way. And now that I'm jittery, now that the DTs are kicking in, now that I know I need to be medically detoxed, all thoughts of sobriety go out the window. Because I need to get what I need to get, right? You need to get well. So they take me to the hospital, some security guard. I know the drill. I know what you do in these places. Takes you to a private elevator. You go up to the fifth floor. You get clicked into no man's land in between two doors. And you have to answer the floor. Yeah, they buzz you and let you in. And there you are, in the lockdown psychiatric unit, one more time. I know exactly what I need to do. You need to go to the person behind the little drugs window and get as many drugs as is humanly possible, right? And I go up to that window. She knows me and I know her. And I said to her, hello, Mary. How are you doing, my love? Did you have a nice Christmas? Mary, I'm going to need my usual cocktail, please. I would like 118 Valiums, 2 pints of Seroquel, whatever the fuck them pink things are, I'll have some of them up there as well. And for once, can I have the penthouse suite? And if that's not available, I'll have my usual room. She's just shaking her head. She gives me as many drugs as she's legally allowed to give me. 10 minutes later, woof, loaded to the gills, ready to start judging people again. 3 hours ago, I wanted to kill myself. Now I'm Lord of the Nut Ward. Now I know exactly what I need to do. Now that I'm in the lockdown psychiatric unit, I know what you lot do when you're in the lockdown psychiatric unit. I gotta go and find myself a little girlfriend in the lockdown psychiatric unit. Don't you lie to me. So where does everybody hang out? They all hang out in the day room. They're all in the TV room. Back then you would go to your room, get changed into a hospital robe, make sure it's tied at the back. I'm loaded to the gills walking down the hallway. I open the door to the day room to look for my next victim. I bang the door against the wall so everybody can look my way, a bit like this right now. Everybody looks my way. I'm all, look at all these morons in here. There's a girl over here banging her head against the wall. There's a guy over here just drooling on himself. And then I see her. Oh, she's the love of my life. I see her. There's this one girl all on her own doing laps around the couch. All on her own. She's got this black hair, but it's all in front of her face. She's got unusually long arms. She's just wandering around the couch going, "Aah!" I'm all, fucking look at that. Oh my God. She looks like that girl out of the movie. What's it called? The fucking Ring or something. I go sliding in there and I grab her by the hand and we do laps together. And we fall madly in love. Then they detox me from the alcohol by giving me all the drugs. Then they detox me from the drugs. And 13 days later, Darren's been missing again for 13 days. And they put me out sober on the other side. One more time. So what? Here's the difference. The difference is Darren has hit bottom. Now then, hitting bottom for me gets misrepresented in these rooms a lot. Hitting bottom for me has become something very precise, and anybody that sponsors people will know this. Hitting bottom is when you ask somebody for help and follow through with all the directions. Think about it. It's not your worst drunk. It's very rarely our worst drunk when we get sober. And I was going to prove it this time. I was going to prove it. I came out of the hospital on a Wednesday afternoon. I had my psychiatric patient bracelet still on. Now, it was a Wednesday and Wednesday afternoon, and I did not take a drink, which is an absolute miracle. I went to a very, very powerful men's stag that night called the Junkyard Dogs. There was 80 men outside this meeting hall, smoking fags and drinking coffee, having a good time. Dozens of them were properly armed with the facts about themselves and the illness. I went straight up to the first serious dude I knew and I said, "Hey, Mike, I just got out today, man. Yet again, I'm going to drink tonight. You know it. I know it. What do I need to do?" And he looked right at me and said, "Holy shit, Darren, are you sober right now?" I said, "Yeah." Nobody barely seen me sober that whole year. He's all, "Oh my God, Darren, shit." He's all, "Let's get into action right now. I've seen how rough you've had it this last year." He said, "Let's get into action. Let's do a third step prayer right now. Listen." He said, "Normally we do some reading, we might get to page 60 in the ABCs." He said, "But let's get into action. Listen, I don't pray, I definitely don't pray on my knees, I don't believe in God, and I hate religion." I said, "What do you mean, Mike, in front of these 80 men?" And he said, "Yeah." And I said, "Okay." I said, "Okay," because the no had been beaten out of me. Darren wasn't too cool for school anymore. Darren was about to conform to the process. We hit our knees, we did a third step prayer in front of everybody. I went into that meeting, I'll never forget it. 10 minutes into the meeting, someone had a grand mal alcoholic seizure. Oh, it was disgusting. It took him 2 minutes of getting redder and redder and seizing up, and eventually he fell off the chair. Now, I've had many grand mal seizures, just never fucking seen one, you know what I mean? I went home from that meeting and I wrote 100 names on my fourth step that night. That night I passed out. I came to at 5 a.m. shaking and baking. I wrote 100 more names. It wasn't even 6 a.m. I was going to drink. I called my sponsor. He answered the phone. He gave me my next column and he saved my life. I called him 12 times that day to finish all three inventories. I went to his house the next day and we did my fifth step. It took us 3.5 hours. He's sending me home for my hour of review and he's all missed. He gave me a big hug, said, "Darren, this is amazing. This has never happened to me." I said, "I'm glad you feel good, Mike. I feel like shit, dude." Don't worry, Darren. Trust in the process. The next day I went to his house and we did steps 6 and 7. 6 and 7? I didn't understand what 6 and 7 were. Nobody understands steps 6 and 7. But I had a lot of willingness and humility and I was desperate to move on, and we did. The next day I went to his house and we did my 8th step. It was easy. I already had my list. I just had to annoyingly transfer it onto another bloody list. And then I added to my list. On my 5th and 6th day of sobriety, I went around Santa Barbara and made 21 amends. 21 amends. And I was lit up like a Christmas tree. I was rocketed into the 4th dimension. My little English heart filled up so much I thought it was going to burst, and everything made sense. Oh my God, this is why Alyssa's so into Alcoholics Anonymous. This is why you guys are sponsoring people. This is why you're being of service. You must get this full heart meeting, and it made sense. Oh my God, this is why half the people are miserable as fuck. They're not doing anything around here. Like I wasn't doing anything around here. They had an epiphany. Oh my God, wait a minute. This is what you're calling God. If you want to call this God, I don't give a shit, because I saw, I felt, I believed. I felt so good. I got up the next day and went to Foodland liquor store just around the corner from, and I asked to speak to the manager. I said, "Sir, I got to tell you, I've been a really bad drunk for a really long time, and I've been coming to your store and stealing vodka." I said, "I will never steal from you or anyone else ever again." I said, "I've added it all up and it comes to $2,750. I said, "It's Friday. I just started work for the first time in years 2 days ago. There's $25, sir. I'll be back every Friday with $25 until I've paid that whole amount off and any interest you determine." I said, "Is there anything else I can do to make this right?" And he looked at me and he just said, "Wow." And I looked at him and said, "Wow." And I floated off to make some more financial amends. I couldn't believe how good it felt to give you your money back. I said to my sponsor, "What's next?" He said, "Oh my God, Darren, I can't believe this." He said, "Steps 10 and 11. I said, "10 and 11, what's that?" He already knew I was a recovered alcoholic if I didn't. He said, "Yeah, step 10, man. Step 10 is to postpone the punishment of. We'll show you what to do right here, right now. Postpone the..." Yes, yeah, one day at a time. Like, were you lot not being punished? My God, my last few years of drinking and living was hell on earth. He said, "Yeah, you can postpone that one day at a time. Then I'll show you in 11 what to do in the morning and what to do at night. 2 minutes, Darren. 2 minutes of meditation in the morning. You're already praying your little English ass off. 2 minutes of meditation, 2 minutes to review your day at night to sandwich the day." Now thank God he gave me the full strength solution. Thank God I'm the worst drunk he's ever met. Thank God he gave me what I now call the guaranteed version of sobriety. Guaranteed. It's not like I like meditation, by the way. Just like you lot, I resist and don't like meditation, but he showed me a little routine of 2 minutes. And I'll tell you right now, I fight it every day, but I can't leave anything out. I can't leave anything out. I'm the worst drunk I've ever met. You can't leave a 5th step out because you have ADHD, can you? No. You can't leave out a 9th step because you don't have enough time to do it, can you? No. So I don't know when it became cool to leave out the meditation part. I'm just ever grateful he gave it to me. Now it's taken me 20 years to go from 2 minutes meditation to 10 minutes meditation. 20 fucking years. But God loves him a little trier. God loves him a little fucking trier. My God is cool, man. My God is cool. My God's got a potty mouth. My God is actually up there laughing his bearded ass off at me down here in the mornings doing my shitty prayer meditation. Laughing his ass off, he is. He says to himself, "Look at that little fuck down there. Look at him doing his shitty prayer and meditation, and he sucks at it." But then he says, oh, he sees me trying, and he says, "Oh, you know what? You know what? Give that little man another day of sobriety." That's how cool my God is. He doesn't care I'm a potty mouth man from Manchester. He cares about my actions. He cares about my helping others, which I do relentlessly. Relentlessly. Steps 10 and 11 are like the keys to the kingdom. Steps 10 and 11 are so simple, you won't do it. Isn't that the truth? What is wrong with us? Only an alcoholic will burn his life to the ground to then come running to a 12-step program just to resist the 12 steps. What is wrong with us? But I am in. I am sold on the plan outlining this book. Now, some of us are sicker than others, right? I'm not as sick as Kevin, but I'm pretty sick. I'm one of those people that has to work a hell of a program just to feel normal. Just to feel normal. I can't go to one speaker meeting a week. I've got to be in the trenches. I've got to be doing the deal. I've got to be sponsoring people, being of service, doing my shitty prayer meditation. I've got to do all that just to feel normal, just to be another worker amongst workers. I sponsor so many people in Santa Barbara. I do so much AA. I should be the Dalai fucking Lama or some shit. But no. I do all that just to be another bozo on the bus. But that's all right for me. I don't mind earning this shit. Why do we do this? Because we get a full heart. Why do we do this? The payoff is immense because we get to enter the world of the Spirit. None of this pink cloud bullshit. It's all consummate and measured towards the effort that we put in. And I don't mind having to work for this one day at a time for the rest of my life. I don't care about that at all. This is the greatest show on earth, man. This is for fun and for free. If you're not sponsoring, start sponsoring people. You get these little soap operas going on in your life. Right? Tragic ones. Weird ones. Wonderful ones. All this crazy shit's going on. But we've entered the world of the Spirit. And I'll finish with this story that kind of sums that up. I was speaking in the Bay Area 8 or 9 years ago. I was speaking at a young person's, huge young person's conference called Akipor. If you've never been to one, you've got to go and experience it because it's annoying as fuck and fun as fuck, all rolled into one, right? 3,000 of these young maniacs have taken over this Hilton complex, right? Many of them ended up in hospital because they've overdosed on Red Bull. But don't worry, they put them on a monster drip and they were just fine. Now I'm the close-out speaker, so a lot of these little wankers have already gone home. Some of them have overslept and they're not coming to the Sunday close-out. I don't know how I'm ever a spiritual close-out speaker. I'll leave that to Bob. But anyway, there's about 600 or 800 of these youngsters all packed into this room. And I'm on the stage. And I'm from Santa Barbara, drove 6 hours to go to the Bay Area. There's a girl next to me, she's going to speak for 10 minutes before me. And everybody's looking at us. There's only a few minutes before we're about to start. But she's texting on her phone. I think that's super rude, right? It's super rude, but it's got absolutely nothing to do with me. So I get involved right away. I say, what the fuck? What are you fucking doing? What's wrong with you? She's all... Now, she's from LA. She's having a problem with her sponsor. Her sponsor is in LA texting her. Her sponsor got sober 21 years previously. Her and this guy, they're in a co-ed sobriety house. There's 20 of them trying to stay sober. Usual story. Most people relapse. Some go to jail, some back to prison. A couple of people die. Her and this guy stay sober 90 days together. It's amazing. He moves to Maui, Hawaii, stays sober, gets plugged into AA, has a family, raises two kids. There's a 19-year-old boy and a 20-year-old boy. They're both on the mainland going to college, but they are dying of untreated alcoholism. He is desperate. No one suffers more than the alcoholic, but the parents are pretty close. And he is desperate. So the only number he still has from all them years ago, he contacts her. She texts a couple of her sponsees. One sat next to me and she said, well, can I give them your number? I need a male number. I said, sure, no problem. We change numbers, everything's good. We give our talks, everything goes great. Now, the conference is over. I'm about to get in the car with all my sponsees. I take all my tough guys with me when I'm speaking out of town. You know what I mean? You take your tough guys with you. Well, you know, all the sleeved up ones. Tattoos, you know what I mean? Well, you never know what might happen. You might run into some of them. Any fuckers, you know what I mean? We all get in the car, we're driving down the freeway, and I remember to call this man. I call the man, he's on hands free, he answers the phone and says, hey mate, my name's Darren, I'm just coming back from a conference, I was told to give you a call, what can I do for you? And there's just silence on the end of the phone. It's so weird, it's just silence. And then we realise the man is sobbing. He's crying and he can't catch his breath. And it's such a moment of humility. And I wanted to cry too. But I can't because I'm with my tough guys, right? Then I look across at the guy next to me and I'm like, wait a fucking minute. Are you crying? Tatted up here. Then I look in the rearview mirror. I'm like, oh my God. They're crying in the back. I'm like, for God's sake, you got tattoos on your face, you moron. Everybody's crying. He eventually gets himself together. He says, Darren, I want to tell you right now, I've never asked for anything of myself this whole time I've been sober. But my prayer has always been for my two boys. He said, if I ever need the help of AA, please let the hand be there. I said, do it, I'm in. I'm all in, man. I'll do anything I can help. I know a lot of people in many different states, and if I don't, we'll figure it out. I says, where are they? What's going on? He says, they both attend Santa Barbara City College. I said, I work at Santa Barbara City College. We have entered the world of the Spirit. And I go back to Santa Barbara and I meet those two young men. One of them becomes a proud member of the Junkyard Dogs for 7 years and since moved to LA and he's killing it. The other one, dying of untreated alcoholism. Isn't that the truth? Isn't that the yin and the yang of Alcoholics Anonymous? Someone in your crew is getting married, getting engaged, they're going to get married or they're having a kid, or the light comes on when you do a fifth step and it fills your heart so much, and then over here someone paroles looking for them. Or they're getting divorced and they're circling the drain of life. That's what happens around here. But this is the greatest show on earth. If you're struggling with God, I'll leave you with this, whether you're new or not so new. Religion might be for those people that are trying to avoid going to hell. But spirituality is for people that have been to hell. Thank you all very much. Wow.